In our series on Daniel. It's been a terrific time. How about I lead us in prayer? God, our Father, we know from Daniel, from the Bible and from our experience in life that you are the sovereign Lord of history, that all history is in your hands, and that even our lives are in your hands. So we pray that you will teach us to humble ourselves before you. Teach us to hear and understand this morning your word. Fill us with your spirit. Give us enlightenment. And Father, we pray that you'll teach us to trust and obey you, to stand firm and to honour you with our lives. And we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Now let's can we go to the next picture there, Michael? Anyone recognise this man? Any sort of guesses? Nice tie. His name is Hal Lindsey. And Hal Lindsey is one of many Christian doomsday prophets. So in 1972 he wrote this book. It looks like the cover of a Monty Python movie or something like that. But he wrote it's just a 70s type feel, The Late Great Planet Earth. Now, anyone read this book? Not many are owning up. Come on, there's 15 million copies in print. Surely more of you have had a read than that. Lindsey wrote this book out of a conviction that world politics were playing out the events predicted in prophecies like Daniel and Revelation. Some of the things that he saw were that Israel had been made a nation once again. In 1948, that was a key sign. The European Union was forming at the time. And Lindsey was convinced that they were about to make an alliance where they would then come under the rule of the Antichrist, some evil ruler who would come and deceive many. He talked about Russia as being the king of the north, and maybe even some sort of communist alliance. He talked about Islam being the king of the south, and they would unite in a battle in Israel against the Antichrist called Armageddon, the great battle at the end of history. Now, Lindsey's predictions were very influential back in the 80s and the 70s, during the time of the Cold War. President Reagan, in particular, was quite influenced by Hal Lindsey. He had him into the White House for discussions with him and his staff. Now, Hal Lindsey actually predicted the return of Christ would take place in 1988. Now, obviously, that didn't happen. I went up to him and I said, look, it's okay, Hal, it's not the end of the world. But he wasn't really comforted about, no, that's just a joke. So he said, no, it would take place in 1988. And then he readjusted his focus to the year of the millennium. But that didn't happen either. But I suppose Hal Lindsey's not saying, look, he wasn't saying these are do or die prophecies. He's just saying, it seems to me that this is when the date will be. And I want to say, even today, Hal Lindsey continues to be very influential, as do many other doomsday prophets. Prophets who are saying that we are in the end of the world. These are the last years of the world as a result of understanding the political movements that are going on around about us. And that perspective has a great deal of influence amongst American Christians and amongst American politicians, and as a result, that influence is felt worldwide. Now, what do you make of all of that? What do you, yourself, make of all these things? Are you a keen observer of political goings-on and marrying them up against Daniel and Revelation and so on? Well, this morning, we come to this last in our instalment in the book of Daniel, the Old Testament book of Daniel. It's been a great journey, hasn't it? Has it been good? Okay. A couple of us have really enjoyed it. And these final chapters, we're doing three chapters this morning, and it might seem a little ambitious, but I think we can do it quite well. But these chapters are indeed about wars and political alliances between the King of the North and the King of the South. They're about the end of the world and what it means for us. So let's dive in to Daniel chapter 10. And his final vision begins in Daniel chapter 10 verse 1 and continues for three chapters. So Daniel chapter 10 verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. Its message was true and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. So let's cut to the map here. So Daniel started, the book of Daniel started in 605 BC. Nebuchadnezzar was the Babylonian ruler at the time. Daniel has been there in the hierarchy of Babylon, even though Nebuchadnezzar's died. Belshazzar's come and died. The Babylonian Empire has given way to the Persian Empire. It didn't happen as quickly as I wanted. Then Darius the Mede came to power, and then Cyrus the Persian. So we're right at the end of the sort of chronology of the book of Daniel. And what's the year there, Michael? 537 BC. And the year that the Israelites returned to Jerusalem is 538 BC. So it seems like what's happened is Cyrus has sent the Israelites back, but it seems like Daniel has remained in the king's service under Cyrus the Persian. And this final vision that Daniel sees concerns a great war. Daniel is disturbed about it. He mourns, he fasts, he prays for 3 weeks as he seeks understanding from God about this great and disturbing war. And then he has a vision in verse 5. He says, I looked up and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice was like the sound of a multitude. Now, as you read it, you know, we've met some angelic figures in Daniel already, like the angel Gabriel, but I reckon it's more likely that Daniel is seeing a vision of God himself at this point. So if you read the start of the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel sees a vision of God, and it is very, very similar to this vision that Daniel has here in chapter 10. For Daniel, as with Ezekiel, it's like the curtains are drawn back and he sees the heavenly reality. He sees the glory of God in all its brightness and majesty. And what do? When you see that, you fall on your face and wish you were dead. Right? That is exactly what Daniel does. It is a petrifying sight. The same happened to Isaiah and Ezekiel and Paul and the Apostle John. When you come face to face with the awesome, powerful, majestic, holy, living God, it is a terrifying thing. And almost all these godly men of the past fall on their face, petrified. But here, God reaches out his hand and touches Daniel. See verse 10? He sets him up, he reassures Daniel, and Daniel's there standing on his legs again, but he's trembling still. And look at verse 12. Then God continued, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them." Now, I reckon this is a beautiful verse. Here is Daniel. We've seen his character throughout the book of Daniel. He's a man of prayer who humbles himself before God. It is a great pattern that he shows us of humility before God, a commitment to prayer. And here's Daniel in a situation where he has been absolutely petrified by this gulf that exists between him and God, right? By this sheer difference between God's holiness and his weakness and sinfulness. And yet God says, don't be afraid. I have heard your prayers. Now, I reckon we too often forget how special prayer is. You know, just what a wonderful privilege it is. And there's a sense to which you don't want to have to go through the experience Daniel went through to realize that, right? When you see what's going on with Daniel, right? You've got the awesome, majestic, powerful God. You've got this weak, sinful human being. And yet God says, don't be afraid. And he says it to us. Don't be afraid. I hear your prayers. I am your father. I listen and I care for you. Right? Prayer is a beautiful thing. Verse 13. God continues, but the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to me to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come. Or come over to verse 20. He said to me, do you know why I have come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince. Just firstly, pick up on this guy Michael. Just put the picture up there. Michael is the prince of the Jewish people, right? It says it there in verse 20 and 21. It also says it over in chapter 12, verse 1. Michael, the great prince who protects your people. Now, this is probably the same Michael that we read about in the New Testament. So in Jude, verse 9, and in Revelation chapter 12, verse 7, Michael is talked about as being the archangel of God's people. But notice here in Daniel chapter 10 that there are other princes spoken of as well. There's Prince Michael, but there's also the Prince of Persia and the Prince of Greece. Now, what's going on here? What is Daniel seeing or hearing about? Right. What's happening is Daniel is being given a glimpse into the unseen world. He's been, you know, the curtains are being drawn back and he's seeing the world of spiritual warfare that lies behind the physical realities that we see and touch. So the Prince of Persia here doesn't represent a particular king of Persia, but rather he is like the supernatural champion of the Persian Empire. He is like the archangel of the Persians, or maybe you might even say the archdemon of the Persians. And the prince of Greece is the same sort of idea, the supernatural champion of the Greek Empire. And Michael is the supernatural champion of God's people, the Jews. And they are in the heavens, they're in the heavenly realms, they are in an unseen reality, and yet their activities are directly related and impinge on what's going on here on earth, even though we don't see them. Now, the New Testament speaks very clearly about this whole supernatural realm of the unseen world. So Colossians chapter 2, verse 15, there in your notes, says that Jesus, having disarmed the powers and authorities, made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. And it's talking not just about earthly rulers, but it's talking about spiritual rulers, right? Angels, demons, all that sort of stuff. These princes of Persia and Greece. Christ is victorious over the powers and authorities in the supernatural unseen world. Yet the New Testament says the battle continues even today. So Ephesians chapter 12, verse 2 says this. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. We're looking at that verse and that chapter tonight at evening church. But our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the authorities, the powers of this dark world and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. So what Daniel sees here in chapter 10 is like the curtains drawn back on this unseen supernatural world. And I mentioned this a few weeks ago, right at the start of Daniel, just how so many in our society have a fascination with all the unseen supernatural forces. So the psychic fair at Mingara, when was that on? Was that on recently? A couple of weeks ago? It's all about connecting with the supernatural realm, with the other world. And they speak very explicitly about that, about crossing over, about contacting those in the unseen world. Now, there's two mistakes we make, right? And I've said this before. Two mistakes we make about this supernatural world. One is that we can dismiss it as nonsense, right? Lots of people say it's all baloney, right? It's a load of garbage, all this psychic fare and all that sort of stuff. There's nothing in it, right? Now, a lot of it might be baloney, and there might be a lot of con men and con women out there, but there is a supernatural world that we can't see. It impinges on our world, and some of these modern-day psychics may indeed be tapping into these supernatural powers. What you can be certain of is that they are dabbling in things that are way beyond their wildest imagination. They are dabbling in things way beyond their control. So the first thing you want to say is don't dismiss the supernatural realm as nonsense. It is there, it is real, and it impinges on our lives. But don't become obsessed and overly paranoid about it either. So the message we get from Daniel and from the whole Bible is that God is in control, right? God rules. Even over those forces that we don't see, He is in control. And as we trust Him and call on Him in prayer, so we enjoy His fatherly protection. Beautiful, comforting words. So let's come back to Daniel and continue on into chapter 11, verse 2. Now then, I will tell you the truth. So now then, I tell you the truth. Three more kings will appear in Persia, and then a fourth who will be far richer than all the others. When he has gained power by his wealth, he will stir up everyone against the kingdom of Greece. So at the end of chapter 10, God told Daniel about the supernatural wars, you know, about the prince of Persia, the prince of Greece. And now in chapter 11, we see the earthly outworking of that supernatural war. Does that sort of make sense? Prince of Persia, prince of Greece, up there in the heavenlies. And there is an earthly battle that, in a sense, is the earthly counterpart of what's going on in the heavenly realms. So verse 2 speaks of four kings of Persia. Now, it's hard to identify which ones are on view particularly because we know about a dozen kings of Persia that come in this period. So Cyrus the Great, obviously, but then he talks about other ones to come. So maybe Darius, a long rule there, or Xerxes, or Artaxerxes. We know about all those guys from the Bible, and there are other Dariuses and Xerxes and Artaxerxes. So there's about 12 of them all together in this 200-year period. And I don't think it really matters if we pin it down exactly, but have a look at verse 3. It says, then a mighty king will appear who will rule with great power and do as he pleases. Now, at this point, it is generally understood, and this is my conviction, that we're talking about Alexander the Great. Right, he is the next great ruler to come on the scene, 336 to 323 BC. He didn't rule for long, but his rule was incredibly influential. Let's cut to the next map. So he takes away the Persian Empire. This is not a map I've done, so it's a bit harder to read, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But now you see the massive just influence of the Greek Empire or the Macedonian Empire. Right? It's there in Egypt. It's up there in Greece, all the way through, you know, Israel, Babylon, right through to India. Right? Just this massively extensive kingdom. Verse 4. It says, after he has appeared, his empire will be broken up and parceled out toward the four winds of heaven. It will not go to his descendants, nor will it have the power he exercised, but his empire will be uprooted and given to others. All right, let's cut to another map. We go to the next phase of history, and this is the Hellenistic Age, right? So this is still like the Greek Empire, and it's the influence of Greece throughout the world, but Alexander's empire was broken up amongst a number of his generals. Now, chapter 11 of Daniel picks up on two generals and two empires in particular within this Hellenistic Age. Can we, what have we got there? Ptolemy was one of Alexander's generals, and Seleucus was another. And those are the two parcels of land that they were given. Ptolemy takes Egypt. Seleucus takes basically what was the Babylonian Empire. But can we focus in a bit closer there on that part of the map? This map, you can find it on Wikipedia. It's an really excellent map. So there's Ptolemy, one of Alexander's generals, then kicks off what's called the Ptolemaic Empire. And in this chapter, he is referred to as the king of the south. And Seleucus starts what's called the Seleucid Empire. And he's referred to in this chapter as the king of the north. And notice here, it's a bit tricky exactly what's going on around Jerusalem. Can we click on Jerusalem? It should be a bit over that way. Oh, there it is. Did you do that? Oh, no, that just happened. Right. All right, so there's Jerusalem. But notice that, and this is what happened over the next couple of hundred years through the Seleucid and Ptolemaic kingdom, is that Jerusalem and Israel would change hands depending on who was more powerful at the time. Was it the Seleucid Empire in the north? Was it the Ptolemaic Empire in the south? And these verses in Daniel, chapter 11, verses 5 to 45, right, is all about a succession of kings in these two empires, the king of the north and the king of the south. Not just one king of the north, but a succession. Same with the king of the south. And these verses describe wars between these kingdoms, alliances. They describe daughters exchanged in marriage. You'll find Cleopatra in there. Not the Cleopatra, you know, of Roman times, but, you know, Cleopatra the First. And if you match these verses up against historical records of the period, then you'll see Daniel 11 is a remarkable historical account of this period of history that took place hundreds of years before Daniel lived. So have a look. See, Daniel lived up there in the time of Cyrus. So around, you know, he was there about 559 BC and, you know, a bit after that. But he's talking about events that take place hundreds of years later. And there, you notice there Antiochus I've got mentioned particularly because he becomes the focus from verse 21. So pick it up in verse 21. He was a Seleucid king. And it talks about how Antiochus is the contemptible person mentioned in verse 21. He will be succeeded by a contemptible person who has not been given the honour of royalty. He will invade the kingdom when its people feel secure. Then he will seize it through intrigue. Then an overwhelming army will be swept away before him. Both it and the prince of the covenant will be destroyed. And after coming to an agreement with him, he will act deceitfully. And with only a few people, he will rise to power. And on it goes. Now, Antiochus, you sort of think, why is Daniel, writing in hundreds of years earlier, focusing the spotlight on this guy Antiochus? And it seems to me one of the reasons is because Antiochus was the Hitler of the ancient world. He really set himself against the Jews. He ruled over them and he oppressed them terribly. Look at verse 28. The king of the north will return to his own country with great wealth, but his heart will be set against the Holy Covenant, right, against Jewish religion. He will take action against it and then return to his own country. At the appointed time, verse 30, ships of the western coastlands will oppose him and he will lose heart. Right? So he'll have a tough time in battle, but then he'll turn back and vent his fury against the Holy Covenant. He will return and show favour to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. His armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. Then they will set up the abomination that causes desolation. With flattery he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant. But the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. Right, in 167 BC, we know from history, Antiochus stopped the temple sacrifices. Instead of clean animals, he sacrificed pigs and other unclean animals. Circumcision became illegal. He actively persecuted any Jewish person who tried to follow the law of Moses. They were killed for their belief in God. So these verses in Daniel, verses 21 to 39, seems to accurately describe this guy Antiochus and his tyranny of the Jewish people. But then the events at the end of the chapter, verses 40 to 45, don't really seem to fit the end of Antiochus's rule. And this is where we sort of go, oh, what's going on there? It doesn't fit as neatly as the rest of the chapter does. So verse 40, at the time of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle, and the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and a great fleet of ships. He will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. And as you try to match that up with history, you go, oh, it's just not as neat as the rest of the chapter has been. And this is the point where many Christians say that there is a change of focus. In verse 40, they would say that the focus shifts from Antiochus to a future Antichrist at the end of history. Let's see if we can get... There we go. See what's saying? So they'd say at verse 40, even though it seems to be talking about the same character, Antiochus, they would say, no, there's been this 2,000-year jump to a future Antichrist figure. And that is why Hal Lindsey speculates about Russia as the king of the north and some Islamic alliance as the king of the south waging war against the Antichrist somewhere in or around Jerusalem. Now, I don't think that sort of understanding of Daniel 11, I think that sort of understanding of Daniel 11 is a mistake. I don't think that's what God is telling us in Daniel 11. I don't think that's where we're meant to go with it. So let me sort of unpack what I think we're meant to be doing with Daniel chapter 11. I reckon we're meant to perceive Daniel 11, right? It does focus on particular kings and particular historical alliances and all that sort of stuff. But I think we're meant to perceive a pattern of history behind the actual particular events. And that is kings rise to power. Daniel 11 traces the history of more than a dozen kings. They come to power, they achieve success, they fight wars, they provoke retaliation, and some of them achieve great status and influence. Some show extreme arrogance and pride, right? The phrase, they will do whatever they please, comes up again and again, right? Just this arrogance. And some of them oppress God's people terribly. But then they fall, right? Each and every one of them will fall. Unexpectedly, they come to an untimely death. So, verse 4 talks about the death of Alexander the Great. Right? After he has appeared, his empire will be broken up and parceled out. Or verse 19 talks about the death of Antiochus the Third. After this, he will turn back towards the fortresses of his own country, but will stumble and fall to be seen no more. Verse 20 talks about the death of Seleucus the Fourth. In a few years, however, he will be destroyed, yet not in anger or in battle. And then verse 45, is it talking about Antiochus or some future Antichrist? Whatever the case, It says, yet he will come to his end and no one will help him. Kings will rise and they will fall. They will meet an untimely death. And that is the pattern that we see continuing on through history. So it doesn't just end with Antiochus. You see the Herods of the New Testament time who set themselves against God's people and against Christ and against his followers. You see the Caesars and the Hitlers and Mao Zedong, and these leaders, they fight wars, they achieve great power, they show extreme arrogance and pride, they oppress God's people, but they all fall, right? Each and every one of them, God brings them low. The people of Zimbabwe, just this week, right, over the last decade, they have endured terrible abuse of human rights under Robert Mugabe. Now, they head to another election this week, and it would be easy to think, oh, it's going to be no different from the last few, where Mugabe's just stacked things and he just imposed himself on it. And 2 days ago, Mugabe said this: only God could remove me from office. And it's an extreme statement of arrogance, isn't it? Only God. And the truth is, yes, Robert Mugabe, God can. And not only can God do it, he will do it. In time. Now, I don't know whether it's going to be this week at the election or in years to come, but Mugabe will not go on forever. God will bring him low. So look at verse 27. Two kings with their hearts bent on evil will sit at the same table and lie to each other, but to no avail, because an end will still come at the appointed time. And this little phrase, at the appointed time, just keeps going. Verse 29, at the appointed time, he will invade the king of the south. Verse 35, some who are wise, yada, yada, for it will still come at the appointed time. Right? It's wanting to reassure us that God appoints the time. God is in control of this process, and there is an appointed time for every ruler, appointed time for them to rise and for them to fall. Or look at verse 24. Halfway through, he will plot the overthrow of fortresses, but only for a time. Verse 33. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword, be burned, captured, or plundered. Right? It will not last forever. It's a short time. Or verse 36. The king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god and will say unheard of things against the God of gods. He will be successful until the time of wrath is completed, for what has been determined must take place. Right? See, in amongst all these political goings on of Daniel chapter 11, centuries of, you know, history in the Middle East, right, God has got it all under control, and it is all happening according to his purposes and according to his timing. And God is in control. He rules over Antiochus, Hitler, Mugabe, and even over some future Antichrist. Because the New Testament does speak about the Antichrist. And he fits the same sort of pattern we've seen in Daniel 11. Arrogant, proud, godless, oppressing God's people. So 1 John chapter 2, right? I've got a few verses there in your outlines. 1 John chapter 2, verse 18. Dear children, this is the last hour. And as you have heard, that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come. This is how we know it is the last hour. One of the things the New Testament leaves you wondering is the Antichrist a unique individual figure at the end of history, or is it a pattern of the sort of person like we see with Antiochus? Is Daniel 11 giving us a pattern of the sort of rulers who will come and will oppress God's people and be godless and exalt themselves and oppress God's people? Seems to me that is That is what Daniel 11 is doing.
It is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11 is doing. He said it is what Daniel 11
doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing. He's setting, that is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what Daniel 11 is doing is setting. That is what